Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
At 21 years of age, Margie Worrell strapped on a backpack and went on a world tour. She crossed the Sahara Desert, traversed the remote highlands of Papua New Guinea, and hung out with the tribes of the Amazon rainforest. She's not one to play it safe, and even to today, has maintained a passion for stepping out of her comfort zone. Margie has over the years become a best-selling author, a Forbes columnist, and a world-renowned advocate for women in leadership. She continues to adventure travel with her family as a wife and a mother of four, and encourages every one of us to follow her example, to choose to live boldly and to dare bravely. We start our conversation by asking where her spirit of adventure and risk-taking comes from.
It's funny, I grew up on a farm and I was a country girl, but there was a part of me that always wanted to just explore the bigger world. I had a big sense of adventure. So the thought of not leaving, the thought of staying in the country was totally abhorrent to me. I was like, no, I've got to get out there. I've got to get out of here. I want to see what else is on offer.
Now, sometimes that can be hard to hear for parents. How are mum and dad about that?
To be honest, I'd love to tell you I was the kind of beautiful teenage girl that my mother was so sad to see leave. But I think she was like, there was five younger siblings. I was a bit of a handful.
Right.
And I do recall mum saying something along the lines of, well, I'll be glad to see you go, and me saying something along the lines of, well, I'll be glad to get out of here. That relationship has well and truly since changed over the years, but I think, you know, that's sort of where I was at as a 17-year-old.
So you head off to university and the world just explodes before you. What were you anticipating doing with your life? What was the grown-up Margie going to look like?
I went and did a business marketing degree. My dad thought that would qualify me to work in a market, so he didn't quite understand why you studied that. But I didn't even really know. I kind of guess I had a lot of glamorous, I thought, I might work in advertising and I had all these glamorous job images in my head. But then actually when I went out in the world more, by my late 20s, I went back to university again to do psychology because I decided I didn't want to spend my life working in marketing and, you know, selling Coca-Cola or lipstick or whatever it was. And I went back and did psychology because I really felt called far more in that direction to help people get out of their own way, which is, you know, I'd had to do a lot of that myself too.
You travel early and extensively, the US, Europe, and then far riskier destinations.
Yeah, and I remember, I remember kind of getting lifts from people. I mean, I really developed, I think, a pretty honed my intuition because so often you've got to, you know, you don't know anyone, you're on your own, and I was often on my own, and someone who's a stranger, everyone's a stranger, offers you a lift or helps, you know, and you've got to go, is this someone I can trust? And, I had numerous people who I remember staying in a Palestinian refugee camp in the West Bank, and someone, I'd gone there and then I missed the curfew to get back to where the hostel I was staying in Jerusalem, and I had to stay the night, and someone said, you really shouldn't have been there. But I met the most wonderful, loving, beautiful people. And time and time again, people go, well, thank you for accepting my invitation, but you really shouldn't accept these invitations from anyone else. You know, I'm good and I really am well-intentioned, but please don't do this again with anyone else that offers you a lift or to say stay in their home for the night and break bread with them. But I think we can live our lives afraid of these situations and really, yeah, there are things that we legitimately need to be afraid of because they can hurt us and harm us or those we love. But so often we can get caught up being afraid of too many things, and fear can sort of set up residence in our lives, and we're afraid to reach out and connect and explore and try things. And I think it's when we do those things, we often come to real, we gain our confidence and courage, and we also build that radar, that intuitive sense of, these are good people. You know, avoid this street, but yes, this street's fine.
When you encourage people, when you implore people to step out and do stuff that scares them, how do we know too far is too far?
Yeah, I mean, there's sometimes a line between being brave and courageous and being reckless and foolish. And some people have a greater appetite for risk than others. So I have four kids and, you know, three boys, and I there are times I'm like, do not ever, ever go out on your bike without a helmet on. Don't ever do that. It's just a stupid risk to take that risk. So of course, we need to be mindful of the risks, but We are actually wired to be risk averse. We're wired to overestimate the size of risk. We're wired. I mean, there's lots of neuroscientific evidence now that shows we're wired to underestimate ourselves, to exaggerate the consequences of things going wrong. And so people can end up living their lives very much staying in their comfort zone, not taking risks. And yet anything truly worthwhile, whether it's in our love life and relationships, whether it's in our careers and jobs and businesses, socially, everything worthwhile demands an element of risk. And so, yes, we've got to be careful we don't take stupid risks. But most of the time when I meet people, they're not taking enough risks. And when I talk about it, it's not talking about physical risks that put our lives in danger. I'm talking about social ones. And just as an example off the top of my head, last night we hosted a parent drinks for all the parents in my daughter's year level. And I had so many people saying, oh, it's so brave of you to do this. And so, and I was thinking, what was brave about opening our home up to people? Yeah. But for a lot of people, they thought that was really brave. And I guess, yes, people could judge my home or, you know, all of those things. But to me, it's like, well, why wouldn't you do that? What a wonderful thing just to invite people in and to get to, because she just started at a new school this year. So sometimes it's even things like that, just being brave and inviting people to your house. Or ringing up and asking someone out, or just doing those things that can seem scary where we risk rejection or risk being judged and just putting ourselves out there.
But surely there was a time where you worried about what people thought of you, Margie.
Look, I would be lying if I never ever thought, if I said, I never care what anyone thinks. I think as humans, we are wired to care about. We're wired to want to belong. We want to be liked. We want to be admired. We want to impress. And we don't like to be rejected, and we don't like to think people are saying critical things about us. And I'm no different, absolutely no different. However, I think over the years I have got better at recognizing where I am changing who I am because of my fear of being judged, or because I'm trying so much to be liked. And so I think it's about, you know, being authentic and just saying, this is who I am. And if I wasn't afraid right now, what would I do? Well, I'd say, hey, you know, come over for dinner. Or I'd say, hey, I'm going to go and travel to this place. And, or, you know, having my fourth child was a bit of an act of courage. Like, oh, can I have four kids and have a career? Like, oh, you know what? I'm going to trust myself and I'm going to do this. So I think, yes, do I never care what people think? No, I would love to say that I was totally beyond it, but I don't let it have power. I try not to let what other people might think of me sit in the driver's seat, because when we care too much about what other people think, we're giving our power to them, and we're living our lives based on what others want or expect of us.
Lest we paint your life as one long, endless summer, of course, that's not been the case. You've experienced a great deal of heartache in your life, the loss of your brother through mental illness and supporting another brother through paraplegia.
Yeah, no, they were extremely tough times. And it's funny, I'm just finishing up writing a new book at the moment, and I just shared with my mum and dad this morning the chapter I've written about my brother, Peter, and I just said, I want you to read this chapter that's going to be in this book, Train the Brave, which will be coming out next year, and just, you know, just so you know, this is what I want to share with people, and they, you know, are very touched by it, because obviously for them it was their son, and as tough as it was for me as my brother, I think to lose a child is even more difficult again. Even my own struggles, I had bulimia for 13, 14 years, and then my brother Frank becoming a paraplegic, and then Peter taking his life exactly three years later. I think through all of that, you learn that life isn't all just wonderful and sunshine. And, you know, I am an optimistic person. I'm a person who thinks life is good. But that doesn't mean really crappy, awful, tragic things don't happen. They happen every day to people around the world. And I think when we can just be really honest and confront that reality, it can help us be more grateful for all the goodness too. Mm. And through, I guess, the heartache with Peter's, he had a long battle with mental illness, with schizophrenia for 10 years. Before he took his life. And you know, trying to come to terms with that in the beginning, I was like, you can turn it around, Pete. We, in the end, it was just surrendering that, you know, life doesn't always go the way we want it to. And people are left to make their own choices. And sometimes it's difficult. But it really helps, I think, if you get, you have to choose, do I get hardened and bitter by this and cynical on the world? Or do I just keep faith that the world is good? And what is the gift in this for me and for my family? And I believe through Pete's suffering, there was incredible gifts for us, acceptance and tolerance and unconditional love and so many beautiful gifts that, but you have to look for them, and they're not, sometimes they take a while to really reveal themselves too.
So in that gap between the grief and the heartache and the realization that there is something better to come, how did you deal with that emotional vacuum that sucks a lot of people in more permanently?
Yeah, I have a strong faith. I pray a lot, and so that really sustains me. Just God, you know, I'm not sure what this is all about. I don't understand, and offering it up, and even just offering up the suffering sometimes. Just I am in pain, but I'm just going to offer this up. I don't know what good it's going to do, but I'll just having faith. So my faith really can help carry me through things. Has a lot. I have a very loving husband, and I also have a very loving family. I have, my siblings, and wonderful friends. And I've always been someone who doesn't keep things tight to myself. I do share, so I will share with people where I'm struggling and when I'm sad, and I'll cry. And I think being able to reveal ourselves and be vulnerable and just to really share what we struggle with people, it also allows others to give to us and to support us, which can be a gift to them too. And I think it really can help carry us through difficult times. And then we can do the same for others. And I think the more we share our struggles, the more others feel at ease to share theirs too. And we're all better off from that. So having a wonderful network around me, having a strong faith, I exercise diligently. I write in my journal a lot, particularly when I'm struggling. And, all those different things can really help. And obviously just my children, life goes on, and they're a source of, so much joy too.
Margie, there's so much more I'd love to explore with you, but we might need to hold that over to another day. As we wrap up, sell living a courageous life to us.
Everything that we really want in life, whether it's in our relationships that we aspire towards, we have to become vulnerable. We have to expose ourselves in some way. We have to be vulnerable. And so when I talk about risk, I'm not talking about Bear Grylls, and I'm not talking about Richard Branson. And I'm talking about just really allowing yourself to be vulnerable to the things you're afraid of, and having faith in yourself and putting yourself out there and allowing yourself to, be at risk of all the things you don't want to happen, whether it's your children going off traveling around the world, or it's, being alone because, a relationship no longer serves you to be in it, if it ever did, or, changing your job because it's dragging you down so much. All of those things take risk. And I think, the more we're willing to take those risks throughout our lives, and they change, the more we open up the possibility of really creating really deeply rewarding and meaningful lives for ourselves. So it's not about taking risk for risk's sake. It's asking yourself, for the sake of what am I willing to do this? And being really present to the cost of inaction. How will it cost me if I don't make this change or take this chance or have this difficult conversation? How will things be 6 months, 1 year, 5 years from now? And so therefore, often that cost can be very steep. And so we have to take a risk then and do whatever it is that we know we're called to do.
Margie Worrell, it's been a positive delight catching up. Thank you so much for a really enjoyable conversation and for joining us in Open House around Australia.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.